Hi, this is Jim from Safety Wars. Before we start the program, I want to make sure everyone understands that we often talk about OSHA and EPA citations, along with some other regulatory actions from other agencies, legal cases, and criminal activity. Everyone is innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. Proposed fines are exactly that, and they are often litigated, reduced, or vacated. We use available public records, news accounts, and press releases. We cannot warranty or guarantee the details of any of the stories we share, since we are not directly involved with these stories, at least not most of the time. Enjoy the show.
This show is brought to you by Safety FM.
And from the border of Liberty and Prosperity, the highway to North. This is Safety Wars for Monday, January 13th, 2025. How's everybody doing out there tonight? If you are in L.A., our thoughts, prayers go out to you. This is really, a lot of the people I have interaction with are in L.A. Or thereabouts. It's heartbreaking, heart-wrenching what's going on there. I know a lot of organizations that are out there I don't want to minimize the suffering out there. When a situation like this happens, the impacts go across the country. So, for example, LA is one of the nexuses for a lot of meetings. And I'm hearing from event meeting planners that they had to cancel a lot of meetings out there, move them, put them elsewhere. They also had issues of price gouging, accusations by hotels. And I want to point out that the prices are often dictated by algorithms and by demand. So when the demand goes up, the prices go up. And oftentimes the hotels and other venues don't have control over that. It's all in there. And they have to realize that it happens and they got to fix it with that. And why am I saying that? We're going to talk about human organization performance here. We're also going to talk about the ongoing fire stuff. Now, if you view me on Rumble, so when I get into politics, I try to keep it off of the first hour of Safety Wars. But there are times that we have to go into politics. And this is the fire in California is one of those times where we can't really separate the politics out there, especially with the duck and cover, the duck and cover stuff that's going on here with the Mayor Karen Bass. Hold on here. I think of things, I got to write them down. With Mayor Karen Bass, the governor Newsom, and the Chief Crowley. And there are other casts of characters out there that have not really made the news. And that we're going to go over right now. And what do you need to remember? We're going to apply the human principles of human organizational performance here. Right, it's easy to go and blame and blame and blame and blame, right? Everyone, oh, this one's to blame, that one's to blame, that one's to blame. Okay, a lot of blame. People are frustrated. When people are frustrated, they're going to start to blame people. Just the way it is. It's human nature. So we're going to talk about human organizational performance. There's some other stuff I want to talk about. I received a text message Friday night from a colleague of mine who runs another organization. And she just said, this is what happened to one of my people here. And he's someone who's extremely, extremely experienced in health and safety. He often acts as health and safety officer, right? Well, health and safety, oversight, health and safety, competent persons, and everything. He does all this stuff. Companies hire him to do this. But what happens is you have to believe in what you're doing. Is there any doubt that me and the other 16, I think it's 16 hosts on Safety FM, believe in what we're doing? Is there any doubt in that? There's no freaking doubt. There should be no freaking doubt in your mind. I'm a retired chief of a fire department that you've heard of, in the city that you've heard of. He doesn't want his name out there on the show. Has said, I have never met a group of people more committed to safety than you guys, meaning us collectively, Safety FM. Never met. You guys are committed. So why do I mention this? Guy, no, he does like side work, gig. He's part of the gig economy. And he does roofing work on the side. He's a very good roofer, residential and commercial. And he ended up going on a project that had to be done real quick. They put everybody in a rush. One, it was Saturday. Number two, the weather was changing. And number three, it just had to get done, right? So he had all of the equipment that you need for working safely. He had a fall protection kit and everything. The person paying for the job and goes up there, and this is one of the person's problems here. It's the old thing called backbone. And what's one of the biggest problems I see in safety, and I've mentioned it multiple times on this program, backbone. Why are safety professionals hated often? Backbone. Hey, put on that safe, those very, hey, you know, hey, remember, safety glasses, a hard hat, and you get the New Jersey salute in return, and then you go and you go hobble away, oh, yeah, we're afraid, you know, thing, and then you get intimidated here. And then you might go, and with good reason sometimes, one, I can't tell you the number of times I've had my life threatened. Because I had one guy follow me home over a pair of gloves because we had a 100% glove policy on a project. Not my doing. That's what the rules of the job were on the project. 100% glove, didn't want to wear them. So he followed me home. And then let's say you reported on up the line to management and supervision. And what happens? They go out there and, right? They go out there, and they don't enforce it. Well, that's your job. Well, no, it's your job. I don't have, because if you're, unlike me years ago, I've wisened up. Do I have the authority to hire? Do I have the authority to fire? Do I have the authority to discipline people? Do I have the authority to make changes? Do I have the authority to reward? And do I set policy for the project, right? In other words, am I the little man on the, or woman for that matter, on the totem pole, as we used to say back in the 70s and 80s? Am I the low person? And no. And now you got to have that worked out. And what happens is we get into this situation where we don't have backbone and everything else. So what do you think? And this is what happened here. This was the stage. This is the context of what we're dealing with. What ended up happening was the guy fell from a 10-foot roof. You may say, well, 10-foot's not that far. Well, guess what? 6 broken ribs, punctured lung, broken arm, whiplash, and concussion. He was in a coma Saturday night. Medically induced coma. This guy had all the training. He had the authority. Ultimately, he had the authority. He could have told the employer, no, I'm putting everything on. If you don't like it, fire me. So in a sense, he did have authority here with this, but not really. He was, for whatever. And what's my thought, my thinking? You have to know, when I go into my leadership program, which we're going to be, going into again in the very near future, you have to set the example No, I'm not right with that. And what does it come down to is this. And we're going to be sharing this a couple of times. We have the the hazard matrix table here. You got this up here. Right? Now, if you're studying for, and I'm not breaking any confidentiality agreements here, if you are studying for any of the credentialed exams in safety that I've heard of, this is on the, in the knowledge section. You have to know about this. Now, some tests may test you on it, some may not know, but this is part of the rubric here. This is part of the thing where you have to know this stuff. I know on some of the, you know, every exam is different, but I, you know, this is part of body of knowledge. This is part of your body of knowledge. That's what I'm trying to say, if you are a safety person. Now, this is going to look familiar. A lot of people have been doing safety, especially people who spend a lot of time in the field. And I run into safety professionals all the time that have never seen this, never heard of it. They're like, Jimmy, what the hell is that? Blah, blah, blah. All that color. We only have monochrome printers. You know. We don't understand. We can't see this. No. But I assure you that if you are on the receiving end of a deposition, this probably is going to be somewhere on there if there is a major thing. So you better know this, and you had better figure it out. It's happened to me several times, and some of the people that I work for, they're like, and no, it does get pretty because if, you know, oh, where's your hazard matrix table? Did you break this out? And right now, this is a basic one. These get very, very complicated at where there are numbers on here and everything. But what we're looking at is, think of it as a graph, right? Where you have on the x-axis, one thing, and the y-axis, something else. On this particular one, right, the likelihood is on the left axis. And across the top, and again, we have an audio portion here that people may not get. So across here, right, so we're going to start from the bottom. We have likelihood of something happened, rare, low. And you have in green, right? I have across the bottom, insignificant, right? And consequence going across. So you have green, which is you have a couple of consequences here. You can have an insignificant consequence, right? And you have a minor consequence. And we have, right, simple and, you know, moderate consequences, right? And major and then critical, meaning you're going to have a loss of life and a catastrophe there. So if you have a rare likelihood, right, and rare means only it will occur, right, on, will only occur, you know, in exceptional circumstances, you go across the bottom here, and you have low, and no, even a major, hey, it's not going to happen. Then you have a critical one where people are going to be, you know, like what we have in California, it's medium, but if it's rare, it's never going to happen, but it can happen. And what the idea is to put in enough controls in place to get this from a critical situation or in the red here, or sometimes they are in orange. These things are done in orange. You need to get it down into the green. So what are you going to do? You're going to make it safer. What does safe mean? The old definition of safe or safety is zero accidents, zero illnesses, zero injuries, 0-0-0. Zero mishap, nothing, right? Spills, nothing. And then what happens? By HR and attorneys, well, if that's the definition you're working off of, then you have one accident, and now all of a sudden, you're an unsafe company. You're an unsafe individual. You don't know what the belief you're doing, blah, 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 blah. And that really is like a 1930s, 1920s way of thinking of things. And but what happens is the organizations have grabbed onto this concept, and the news media, and change this around. I'm always trying to change this around. And I can speak for most of the people on Safety FM. No, I don't know. I don't listen to all the podcasts. I don't have enough time for that. But they try to push us with the big ones. See, Jay Allen, Todd Conklin, Brent Sutton, all these people try to push this. Sam Goodman, all try to push this. Sheldon Primus, everybody, right? Capacity and resilience, your ability, what you could do, and the ability to adapt and everything else on here. Now, what's the new thing? It's capacity and resilience. Capacity. So what you're going to do is try to add more and more capacity into this to get this down into the green area here with this. Now, wildfires in L.A., where do you start on here on the likelihood part? On the right-hand side, I have it highlighted here. All right. Now, wildfires... I've read a lot. I mean, I grew up reading National Geographic. Where I get this stuff, I couldn't even tell you because I read. Growing up, I've read a lot. But California is basically an arid area. You get those Santa Ana winds flowing in, and California is basically an arid area. It's one of the few places on earth where you have all the growing zones. I think there's 9 growing zones for agriculture. You get them all there. So you got wet areas, you got dry areas, you got the desert down south. You have, if you've ever been there, beautiful state, by the way, go off of Interstate 5 through the San Joaquin Valley. Beautiful, beautiful. Make that ride. Go down the Pacific Coast Highway. You see all the landmarks that you grew up with watching on TV if you're from the East Coast, right? Great place. Love it. Right. Love the landscape there. And I am everyone. You know me personally. I love landscapes. Love them. Back in the day when I got involved with photography and I practiced it as a hobby, it was always landscapes. Right. Because that's my thing. Beautiful area. But anyway, starting about the gold rush, 1849, roughly 1850, California went through a little bit of a climate change where it became a wetter, less arid area, and that's when things ended up getting built up there and settled. And that's where a lot of these settlements on the coast happened, like the one we're talking about, Pacific Palisades, that whole neighborhood there. Back in the 1840s, there were descriptions from people on ships that, hey, now, this area, there were forest fires here and everything else, right? And there were wildfires, and wildfires are nothing new. But basically, they wonder under certain late in the, like the 1970s, 1980s, started to dry out again. And that's my understanding from meteorologists and from people who study this stuff. And what ended up happening was, right? This is what I've read. I know about that stuff. It's not my primary study. So now, what did you need? You needed more of everything. No, you got the buildup. You had the Salton Sea was one of there, an inland sea dried up because of agriculture. Then you had water rights issues going on there and everything. And what happened was the capacity, right? You're getting more and more people in. Reportedly, L.A. City, the city of L.A., doubled in population from like the 1960s. So now you have an influx of people. The planners that are involved, right, did not plan for this. And what did they do? Remember, safety is capacity and resilience. They reduced the capacity of them for themselves. In effect, they did not have the capacity to respond to this emergency. So they reduce safety because they reduce capacity. Now, since we know that we have on the hazard matrix table here, it's possible, some would say likely, that there's going to be a wildfire at some time. Now you have you're in the likely, right? The likelihood of something happening is likely. And what's the consequence? Critical, high, major, or critical? Meaning you're going to have some kind of serious guvno going on out there. So now you're on that end of it. High or extreme, it's critical, which means you have to add more and more and more capacity and resilience into the system to get it down into the green area, where you want to eliminate the hazard the best you can. How do we eliminate the hazard? Many, many, many different ways. How do you increase capacity for fires? Right? And we're going to go, let's go to commercial break, and we'll come back with that here, because this is a little bit of an in-depth discussion here. We're probably going to have some music here. Hold on, here you go.
Have you listened or watched the Safety War show? It does stream live on the radio and on the streamer emers that we have. So if you have not taken a listen to Jim Bozell and what the hell he's doing every evening with Safety Wars, I would strongly encourage you to take a view or take a listen, whichever option is available for you, and take a listen to what the hell he has going on. It will take some deep dives and some information that you might be interested in.
In the professional safety community, communication and planning are just a few keys to your program's success. The question many practitioners have is, where do I start? Dr. Jay Allen, the creator of the Safety FM platform and host of the Rated R Safety Show, has built a global foundation to help you along the way. Go to safetyfm.com and listen to some of the industry's best and most involved professionals, including Blaine Hoffman with the Safety Pro, Sam Goodman with the Hop Nerd, Sheldon Primus with the Safety Consultant, Jim Pozell with Safety Wars, Emily Elrod with Unapologetically Bold, and many others. As individuals, we can do great things, but as a team, we become amazing. Dial into safetyfm.com today and surround yourself with a powerful force of knowledge and support.
OSHA recordables, catastrophic losses, environmental disasters. You want answers? So do I. This is Jim Pozell with Safety Wars.
That's my daddy.
So we have all different kinds of ways of adding capacity into the system here. Now, what they've done in Los Angeles, and again, and this is one of the things that they allegedly could not audit here, is that they have an emergency preparedness booklet. It's available online. It's available online. It's 39 pages. And let's scroll on down here. Wildland fires. All right. And this is the preparedness right here. All right. Before the fire, park your car heading out and keeping your eyes with you. We're adding capacity and keep your keys with you. So that's one piece of capacity. Two, place important documents, records, and digital files inside the car. Yeah. You're going to do that in case you have a thing. Now you're speeding things up, so you're adding capacity into the situation. So we're on to two things, right? Third thing, unplug automatic garage door and openers in case of a power failure. So you're not putting, right, taxing the system, and you don't have live wires going on there. All right, that's three. Have pet carriers and trailers ready to go. That's four. Close all doors and windows inside your home. Leave all drapes coverings open, but leave the lights on. I guess that's in case they want to look inside to see if anyone's there, right? With that, I would think. So now we're up to five things we're adding capacity. Move combustible materials away from the exterior of the home. And what they, according to the fire code, right, and that's six. And now the fire code is number seven, but they have multiple things in the fire code to continue to, what do you call it, add capacity. So here we have a 200-foot, 200-foot separation distance between any kind of brush and structures. So that's the eight. And then you have a fence line, right? And keep things away from the fence line. That's 11. Right? Keep the things away from the house by 18 feet. That's 10. Right? With that. So that's all the stuff that you have there. And I would add even more to this. Do you have your own fire fighting capabilities, fire extinguisher? Are you like and I'm not going to call out names, but there are rich people that could afford their own fire service and their own firefighting equipment. Do you have that? All right. That's 12. Do you have a fire, so you have your own firefighting equipment and everything else? That's 12. And that includes a pool with water. That's 13. I would put that down. What else do we have here? Do you have just enough, limit your amount of combustible materials, gasoline and everything, which I think is illegal in there anyway, probably. But I'll put that down since we have listeners from all over the world. All right, we also have a fire blanket in my house. Not only fire extinguishers, but fire blankets. All right. And I did train everybody how to use them in the house. All right, so now we're up to 15. Let's see a systemic issue. Those are all things for the household. All right, so we did 15, not a complete list, right? But those are 15 things. Now, do we have trained fire people? Do we have fire hydrants? Do we have enough capacity? That would be another one in the fire hydrants. Didn't have them here. Do you have a emergency notification system for the town? Yeah, they did. They had it through, and it's in this pamphlet here with here. This is for escape routes also, right? Do you have, we can continue with the house, right? Escape routes, that would go under house. They're up to 16 there. Windows, make sure the windows are not stuck, right? And windows thing, escape routes. And that's another one, right, we have written down. Do you have training for yourself and your family? Do you have a 911 service? And that would go down over here into that. So you have all of these things in here, and you're adding things into your thing. Now, do you have smoke alarms? Right, there's another one. You're adding capacity. Are the batteries in there? Do you have a system in place with that to evaluate that? Do you have a central control system like we have in our house for fires? All right. And so right off the bat here, and note, are the people qualified? Are the firefighters qualified? Right? There's another one. There's some question on that, and that's all politics. We're not going to get into, but we're going to assume that they hire qualified, competent people to do the job. So now, right, do you have the budget? Do you have the machinery? Do you have, right? So now we're up to adding more machinery with that. Do you have streets clear, right? Right, and right off the top of our head, we listed for the household, we just listed 21 things that you could do, and for the system itself, another 10 things. Now you're adding capacity into the system when you do this. And this is only a partial list that we mentioned on air. We could do more and more and more. You keep on adding capacity into that to get down into the green area that we mentioned on there. Now, and that's what how you do a hazard matrix table, basically. some of the more modern techniques is that they go and they add numbers to this, and you actually do calculations based on the numbers. And again, there's a little bit of, especially on the likelihood of something happen, bias goes into that. I'm not going to lie. This is a qualitative, a lot of qualitative, so some biases may come in. And one of the biases you have to take into account is you get people making this out, especially in the construction and environmental field and general industry too. Well, let's just say all of them, where I've never seen that injury happen or heard of it happening. So therefore, it can't happen. I hear that all the time, right? All the time. That's a common, I guess you would call it a trope. I don't know if that's the right word. You hear that all the time. Oh, I never heard that happen. I've never seen it happen. So therefore, it can't happen. All right? And the other thing is this. Do they identify the consequences correctly? Now, the hazard matrix table has all different types of applications, and we're going to figure that out right now. This is with it right now. So let's pull up the hazard matrix table again. With that, right? And, okay, here it is. All right, there's your hazard matrix table. This could be applied, and what the idea is that you get people talking and thinking about safety. That's part of what the hazard matrix table is. Some of the oil facilities out there that I was brought up in, they make this a formal meeting where you sit down with everybody with that, and they use it to slow down the work. I've been seriously, there is a British oil company that has told me that they use this to slow down the work and everything. So, and if you do not prep your workforce, right, you get a foreman that shows up or a supervisor that shows up, he's a field person or she's a field person. She's never seen this before. Never. So now we have to go this. And I get phone calls all the time. Jimmy, I've never seen this before. What is this? And it's like, well, if this is what it is. And not that we don't train this, but oftentimes the training that we're asked to do does not include risk assessments because a lot of clients don't want to go there. But I assure you that after they go through this, all of a sudden I get all the phone calls. Jimmy, we need a training class on this. I said, I figured you did. You didn't want to hear about it before. Now you're going to hear about it. And we go through this whole thing here with them. And I actually had a client tell me one time, we don't have sophisticated people. We deliberately don't hire sophisticated people to understand this. So I'm like, well, that's, again, no. Then they try to blame me. I said, I don't have the authority to, come on, everybody, you know it. I don't have the authority to hire, fire, discipline, blah, 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 blah. I do have the capability of inspiring, but you're the guys with the incentive program here with that, right? Hold on. Right. So, you go in there, again, if you want training, 845-269-5772, we get into really deep things here. So what if you are a supervisor? You are a manager. You are a decision maker. You are a politician, right? Let's say that you're a politician, like mayor, fire commissioner, name it. Super, what's your consequence on here? You can say, well, an owner of a company, the consequence is that they're going to have a loss of some sort. Okay, fair enough. You have a loss if you are an owner of a company. But are you the one directing the work in the field? Are you the one closest to the field if you are an owner? If you're owner of a small business, More likely, yes. Let's say you're a member of a corporation here. You're a president of a corporation. You are a corporate safety director. You're away from the field. Let's say, right, and if you're a commit, let's say you're a, into, what do you call it? Let's say that you're a, somebody involved in oversight, like a commissioner, like a, trying to get this resolution right here. Something like that, you're going to be so far away from this stuff. And you're not going to be able to assess this type of thing because you're not at the sharp end of the stick. So, for example, a fire chief would be able to use this table, knows what the hazards are. Usually the fire chiefs, they're experienced firefighters. They know what they're doing. They've been there. They've gotten the training and everything else. All right, that's what we're looking at here with that. So they're able to say, well, what the likelihood is, we know what the risks are and everything else associated with this. If you're up the food chain, you don't really have an idea often what's going on here because I've never seen that kind of accident come across our desk. We're more worried about making money and being profitable than safety and everything else that goes in there that we talk about. So here we have, looks like we're going to hour two here, which you'll pick us up on Rumble. So politician, what do you have here? All right. What are the consequences for a politician or a commissioner or an appointee? Unless it's criminal behavior, which you have sovereign immunity, for the chances for a safety issue going beyond losing your job and getting ridiculed, on the consequences here, those are all freaking insignificant, especially in the United States. Other cultures, there's real consequences here. You may go to jail. You may be, who knows, maybe the death penalty in some cases. In the United States, we have a thing called sovereign immunity, and in in the English-speaking world where, okay, you screw up, who cares? Best example of this is 9/11, September 11, 2001. Afterwards, when they realized that they weren't going to get any new, this turned in from a rescue operation into a recovery and cleanup operation, the air is safe to breathe. We all know who said that for that. And that there's more to it than that, but basically that's it. And we covered that on our program because I spoke to at least 4 certified industrial hygienists and advised the person who made the decision, and she blew him off on that saying that communicated and there was no problem. We also have with the recent pandemic, we had people making decisions and everything not being held accountable. So we know in these major things, no one's held accountable, and they're duck and cover. So what are the consequences here? For Gavin Newsom, the Governor Newsom, guess what? Probably he's kicked out of national politics, but oh well. You know, again, Americans are very forgiving. He may be back. The mayor, same thing, kicked out of this. The 5 fire commissioners, which we talked about Saturday night on the Safety Wars Live, that special broadcast, L.A. is burning, right? Those people are all, there's no consequences. So regardless of what the likelihood is, there's no consequence, and therefore you're in the green for everything, for their career-wise. Seriously, they all got other gigs going on. Like being a fire commissioner is a side gig for them. I don't know if they earn anything. They're appointed by the mayor. The mayor may have to resign, but still insignificant. Unless it bothers you, the history may not be kind to you. They don't care. So this is where it happens on the consequence. So where there is no consequence, there's no risk, is what it comes down to. Let's say you're talking about a workplace. You have a supervisor, a foreman here, and we're going to go over the field operations manual for OSHA. If something happens, and there's really no consequence. So do they have any risk? There is no risk because there is no consequence to what they do. What they get yelled at? They may lose their job. Just go somewhere else. And by the way, unless it's made in the newspapers, they get fired, they call up for a reference. It's against the law in most jurisdictions for employer to say, don't hire Frank. Frank's an idiot. Frank got somebody hurt. So Frank doesn't care about safety. They can't say that. So again, there's no risk built in here, and they act accordingly. Sovereign immunity strikes again is what it comes down to here. And nobody's in charge. Nobody's responsible. Now, the thing is, you have to hire qualified individuals to fill these roles. Now, you're going to say, well, Jim, where are you going with this? Starting on Monday, this upcoming Monday, we have what is called an inauguration for the President of the United States. They've already started hitting down ground on the confirmation hearings, is my understanding, with the process part of it. I don't know when they start or anything, but on the process part of it. Now, you're going to say, well, okay, where are you going with this? I'm going to say to President-elect Trump, I'm going to say to everybody else involved in my listening area here, which is 27 countries and, basically everywhere. You're going to hire competent people who know what's going on, who have a little bit of experience in the sharp end of the stick. And oftentimes, safety professionals have never been at this sharp end of the stick, but that's okay. Can they learn? That's the question. Learning is vital. Human and organizational performance, right? Learning is vital on that. So let's go over, and we're going to go over to where is it? Okay. Services about. Okay. Organization. So right now we're going to do a share screen here. Oh, I just had it. I just closed it out. What am I doing to myself here? Okay, here we have. So, boom, 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 here, share screen. Sorry, folks. This software, I don't have audio interference from, so that's why I intend to use what I am using here. I'm still learning to use the other software. It's not good for this venue here. So this is from LAFD.org Fire Commission. So, and again, I'm using this under fair use and as commentary and as part of the news. You are a news organization here. Here we have Fire Commission. This is LAFD.org, Fire-Commission. The Los Angeles Fire Department is overseen by a 5-person civilian board appointed by the mayor and affirmed by the city council. Pursuant to the city charter, this diverse and qualified group establishes goals and provides direction to the department through the fire chief, Kristen Crowley. Right? Okay. So, and they have public meet. I have a feeling that the third Tuesday this month, there's going to be a hell of a lot of people here. And I've also looked at a couple of these recordings. I think that it's going to be packed here. So it's headed by Gina, and these are the people who have not made the news. Gina Hudley Hayes. Gina Hudley obtained her undergraduate degree in 1968 from Texas College in Tyler, Texas, a BA in English. She was awarded an MED from Pepperdine University in 1972. In 1976, Genethia completed a MBA program with emphasis on nonprofit management. And she's going on. She's a certified mediator. She had a specialization in public policy. She taught, was a school teacher for a while here. I mean, for a long time, and dealt with that. She resides in the town, and everything else. Okay, educator. Okay. In addition to her passion and commitment to educational equality, Shanethia has spent her life improving quality of life for all families living in low-wealth communities through the creation of policy and legal remedies to dismantle systemic racism and structural barriers based on race, gender, and sexual identity. So, you know, she sounds like a wonderful person. We have Sharon Della now. Let's go back to the commissioner. I did a Google search in the news for every one of these people. The only one that showed up in a Google search, again, one of the largest fires, perhaps it's being named by the end when all is said and done, perhaps the largest disaster in U.S. history here. When adjusted for inflation and everything else, this is going to be bigger than the Chicago fire of the 1800s and the same day the Wisconsin fire, which was the same day, which caused more damage than the Chicago fire, which is why we have Fire Prevention Month in October. At least that's what they said when I was in elementary school. All right. So this is from CNN. This is from Sunday, January 12th. As firefighters continue to battle raging fires across LA, a cut into LA's fire department 2025 budget and its commitment to recruiting a more diverse force have come under attack. This is CNN here, not Fox. I'm going to point that. Four major fires across LA have killed 16 people. Numbers up to 24 as of this morning. I don't know if they updated as of tonight. As crews work to contain the inferno, LAFD Chief Kristen Crowley is facing criticism for prioritizing DEI within the department. Meanwhile, Crowley has expressed concerns about accepting $4 million cut to the department's budget, which included reductions in overtime staffing. Now, there's some debate here with accountants, but basically, if you ever had a budget and were in charge of a budget, you're not allowed to move stuff from one item to the one line item to another. So some line items were apparently added to, some were detracted from. The $17 million, that was one of the ones that were detracted to. And let's add this thing. She says there's 62 fire departments short for the amount of calls that they get. Whatever analog she's using, I'm not sure. But she says there's not enough people, not enough equipment, not enough everything to do this type of thing. Los Angeles Fire Commission President Gentia Hudley Hayes said it is out of line to blame any local official. Again, why am I not surprised for her to say this? President Gentia Hudley Hayes, which we just mentioned, it says it's out of line to blame any local official for the magnitude of the fires, saying the focus should be on helping residents who have lost everything. Okay, we have to do that. We have to help people. Make a donation to a legitimate organization. That's all I have to say on that. You figure out what that is and what that means to you. The commission is composed of a 5-person civilian board appointed by the mayor and affirmed by the city council that oversees the fire department. This is not the time to demonize people. Okay. The fire department budget has grown steadily year by year from $674.27 million in 2019 to $819.64 million in 2025, but it's down from $837.19 million in 2024. However, Hadley Hayes said it has been underfunded for at least a decade. Okay. She's apparently, she may be the only one talking that's authorized to talk about this. And you can go to CNN.com to read that. And the politicians basically duck and cover. Fire department, according to Robert Hawkins, friends in the Los Angeles City's Centurions. I don't know what the etymology of that is. I'm sure it's significant for black firefighters. He said he does not believe the budget impacted the department's ability to fight the wildfires. The fire department has been in disarray due to a lack of clear direction from leadership, Hawkins said. He says there's been a revolving door of assistant chiefs under Crowley, close calls on firefighter deaths, and inadequate training. Hawkins noted an instance this week where firefighters show up for work, got suited up, and then were told to go home. He also mentioned that at times there are firefighters ready to work, but not enough fire engines to take them out to the fires. There's a frustration, a lack of trust in our leadership. We just don't have faith in our leadership. And I'm shocked that CNN is talking about this or with this. Right, focus on leadership, blah, 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 blah. Okay, now, let's go back to Board of Fire Commissioners. Corrine Tapia, Babcock Commissioner. She has served the Los Angeles Fire and Police Pension Board of Commissioners since 2014. Now, I know from a friend of the program that is a very important thing here, to have somebody on the commission that knows about pensions and things of that nature, because that is a highly specialized part of being involved in as a commissioner. Right, my understanding, extremely high thing, is that you have to have somebody there who knows what the hell they're looking at when you're seeing this type of issue. And if you do not have someone who knows what the hell is going on in the pension, bad things happen. So that makes sense that you have somebody like Corrine Babcock on there. Right now, she is the managing broker and owner of Five Heights Realty Corp, an independent real estate brokerage company specializing in residential and commercial sales and acquisitions of real property. And going on and on and on. And concentration in investments and things of that nature. Okay? But the thing is, she is not, a firefighter with this and not a public safety professional. Here we have Jimmy Hara, who's also a commissioner. He's an MD. He's a professor of family medicine, interim associate dean for the College of Medicine, right? So, again, having someone like this on as a commissioner, again, that could be another important thing. But again, he's not a firefighter. He's not a public safety person. Having somebody here who is medical issues, again, firefighters have medical issues. You probably need someone who knows something about medicine, but he's not a firefighter here, right? Again, on the medical stuff here, you cannot say, I don't think you can find anyone more qualified than this person to do this job. He was a lieutenant commander and was a medical officer for the cruiser destroyer force of the 7th Fleet during the Vietnam War. Right, he's an active supporter of the Soldier Project and Wounded Warrior. Again, great. Good to have someone like that here on that, overseeing this. And then we have Jimmy Woods Gray, the commissioner. Jimmy Woods Gray is commissioner of the City of Los Angeles Fire Commission. Jimmy moved from Tyler, Texas, to attend a college at blah 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 bachelor's degree from CSU LA, and earned a master's science degree from Pepperdine, and basically an activist, community activist here. We received a lot of honors, served on a couple of other commissions and everything. Jimmy attended the 2012 Democratic National Committee as a delegate in Charlotte, North Carolina. In 2012, she was reelected to the LA County Democratic Central Committee. She continues to be an activist in the community. You can make your own judgment on that. But what we're seeing here is that we're not seeing anybody on the sharp end of the stick who's a member here. There may be now, in their defense, I don't know all the legalities, there may be a prohibition against an actual firefighter being on the commission because it's supposed to be a civilian thing. But the thing is this, if you're going to set something up like this, you have to have the ability to form a learning team, run Sutton. You have to go out there and, what's the word I'm looking for? Learn the job. Did they do that or not? That's a question. They, on paper, we just went over this. As a certified safety professional, certified hazardous materials manager, and a whole bunch of other things, right, credentialed person, right, I often am called into jobs and to do acts investigations and things I don't know. I have to learn the job. Did they learn the job of a firefighter? Now, if they're not able to do that for whatever reason, some of these folks are retired and everything, I get it. Why? The question now becomes, when Chief Crowley went up to them with all these things and budget, if she was ignored, and if this has been a problem for 10 years being underfunded, why is that a problem? Why aren't they screaming from the rooftops here? I mean, you know, I have a whole bunch of stuff right here. And then I go through my notebook here. Why aren't they going through all this stuff? Why is that? And now, how does this translate? And we're coming up to the top of the hour. How does this translate into your organization? Well, you say, well, Jimmy, it doesn't. Blah, blah, blah. Yeah, it does transfer to your organization. Have you ever been? I've been in Chief Crowley's position many times. If you've been in the business long enough, you have been. You make a recommendation. You say, I need a budget. I need this. I need that. I need, blah, blah, and they say, no, you don't need it. Or, yeah, don't worry about it. Or they, right, and they don't give you a budget to work in. Or you say, I need this. No, we don't have the money for it. We don't have this. We don't have that. Blah, 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 blah. And, you know, I don't need to go on. You folks know what I'm talking about. And there is an accident. Then they try to dump it on you as the blame, especially if you're a third-party consultant. Has that ever happened to me all the time? But what the question is, and I have to ask this now because we were involved with some situations lately. I made the recommendation. It's in your safety plan to do this and everything else. Why wasn't it done? I'm making this recommendation. Why are you not accepting that recommendation? It's always going to be in writing, by the way, either text message or that, or it's going to be on video. Right, because right now everybody is now body cameras are very popular now, and one of the jobs I'm on now, everything is on video. Everything except the bathroom and the office is on video, and they have audio on that too. You're being video and audio taped at all times. Well, why are you doing? Right, so this would have been a question, maybe not by the Chief Crowley, because that could be considered insubordination, but can she get an activist in the community to go out there and say, hey, if we're short on all this stuff, why wasn't it fixed? Why don't we have desalinization plants that were approved, the funding was approved in 2014? Now you understand the importance of holding your politicians' feet to the fire, so to speak. Sorry for the pun, but that's basically it. You have at least 200,000 people impacted here. You have people under evacuation orders. The fires are not fully contained or anything else. What are you going to do about it? Because right now, I can see there's going to be a lot of questions here. People are not going to be commissioners. People are not going to be involved in the Water Resources Board, for example, that did not, for whatever reason, a lot of these things did not get built. There's going to be a lot of questions. The thing is, well, on the front end of this, you have to ask that question. I made these recommendations. Hey, Chief Crowley made these recommendations. Why was she ignored? She owes, by the way, not only does she own an explanation, the voters are owed an explanation, and everybody else is owed an explanation. And remember, politicians, what do they want to hear? This was never sold as a problem during the campaign. They talk about money, they talk about this, they talk about that. Public safety was not really, from what I could see, a subject in the thing. Now, in the debates. Now, this is what I'm going to ask you to do. Bottom line, we voted for all this. And this is what I'm going to ask you to do. Go out in your community, assess fire hazards, go to the fire commissioner. If you have brush and untended forests here, like we have in our town, someone's going to answer for that before the fire starts. That's all I have. Now, we're going to be ending hour one. We're going to be going into hour two of our program. So we're going to play the outro right now.
The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the host and its guest and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of the company. Examples of analysis discussed within this podcast are only examples. They should not be utilized in the real world as the only solution available, as they are based only on very limited and dated open source information. Assumptions made within this analysis are not reflective of the position of the company. No part of this podcast may be reproduced, stored in a retrieval system, or transmitted in any form or by any means, mechanical, electronic, recording, or otherwise, without prior written permission of the creator of the podcast, Jay Allen.
Warning, the following broadcast contains adult language, adult content, frank safety discussions, and stories that might sound unbelievable. But believe me, every one of those stories is true. We didn't start the safety war, but we are going to fight to win it. For our families, for our communities, for our workplaces, and for our lives. And welcome to Safety Wars Hour 2. We're broadcasting live on Rumble, on YouTube, and I think Facebook. So we're going to continue our discussion here. So, there are a lot of questions. We're talking about the California wildfires. There's a lot of questions here on what has to happen. Now, what happened on Friday? On Friday, we had video problems that I didn't know about. The camera went out, you know? And now that we have more information, I can put on a better broadcast. We had a really deep dive last night or Saturday night on Rumble. Hour and a half, and we're going to continue this discussion here. So, we have human and organizational performance, right, on this stuff here. And you're going to say, well, what's the big deal, human organizational performance? Part of how do you do a fire investigation with this? Any investigation of this scope. Right, and the reason why this takes so long, and this is going to be years probably before they do this, and that there are political reasons for that, because they don't want it to be part of the next election, probably, or maybe they do want it to be part of the next election. So this will all be done, this will all be done in time for 2026 midterm elections, and when everybody's up for election there in L.A. Human or organizational performance, right? One, blame fixes nothing. These are the thing. Number two, human error is normal. Three, context drives behavior. Four, learning is vital. And five, leadership's response matters, right? Now, whoever's doing the investigation here, this is where this has to go. We're not in the blame game. It's easy. Now, my mom always just tell me, because something feels good doesn't necessarily mean you should do it. Believe me, blaming people, especially in a situation as horrendous as this and widespread as this, does nothing. We're not interested in who to blame. We're interested in finding out what happened. And can we learn from that and improve on that? Which means you need to, right? And again, unless you're a member of an organization like the one named after the rainforest and the river in South America, you have to, and they're not the only organization. In that organization, do you believe it? Now you have what is called the, you have to do the five whys, the Socratic method, and it has to be, documented. But you can make that seem, do whatever with that. You can lead that wherever you want. Now, so the question is this, the five whys, right? Let's try that out. One, we already discussed in hour one, lack of capacity in the system. Right, so we're looking at right off the bat, and there has to be a formal investigation. This is all based on media reports, and it's not a complete list. You have budgeting. That's where you have to ask, why was the budget the way it was? What was the origin of a budget for shortfall? Or like the commissioner said, name escapes my mind, the fire commissioner says, Genthia Hudley Hayes, why was this? Here, I can turn off Safety FM here. Right, distracting. Why was the budgeting the way? Why? How did they come with? Why was there a budget shortfall? Second question I have to ask. Water supply. How did they screw up so much on that water supply? Number three is personnel. They were getting them from Canada and from some surrounding states and from Mexico, which is good. But there are reports of firefighters being turned away and turned down, especially New York City was in a Senate contingent. They said they didn't have them. But then they're complaining that they don't have enough people or equipment. So that's kind of hard to try to judge there. Personnel, equipment, right? Not enough firehouses, which includes people and equipment, right? Right. Now, reportedly, there are supposed to be audits on property. How can there be property audits? And this is going to be a very controversial one that I'm going to ask about is how did this area become developed? Can we find out a cause of the fires? Right. So how did this area become so developed, right? With that, who designed the development? And what about the master plan? were there attributes to the properties that added to the fire? Right. So I'm going to put down appropriate. All right. Appropriate. And again, this is all being done in real time here. I didn't prep this. Appropriate property, right? Our houses, right? And what were the qualifications? Were there more qualified people to run it? Run the department, I mean the commissioners. I mean, we went over in hour one with this, but no. Did they make themselves qualified once they got there? Hey, we're overseeing fire commission. We're fire commissioners. Are we going to go out there and look at actual fires and see what the what the hell's going on? Are we going to have some type of a learning team here, and which is part of? Right. So rather than investigation, can we do a learning team here? Well, this is going to be a very high level learning team, but how do we get what happened? What's the context? The financial context, right, comes into here. What kind of leadership response? Right now, I had people comment on the leadership response. Right. Was it appropriate for the fire chief to go on Fox News and a couple of other places and start digging up, drop my pen here, and start digging up the dirt and mentioning all the stuff that was going on, airing the dirty laundry? Pardon me, I have mixed feelings on that. Because I have a feeling that if that conversation happened behind closed doors, and would have never seen the light of day. The other thing is, if she gets fired over this, now we're talking whistleblower case for her, possibly. Being a public employee and then complaining and then being fired or something else happened, now you have a whistleblower thing. So I think that she had, I think she had the mare over a barrel here. So what do we do here? I mentioned at the end of the first hour, right? This is a political problem. Are we going to hold the politicians accountable for this here? What does that mean? I want everybody to go into their community as you're able to, and if it's safe, identify public safety and fire hazards and bring it to the appropriate commission and ask questions. Because I have a feeling that if that happened on a massive scale here in L.A., if we weren't all concerned with everything else in our lives, right? And again, remember, I'm one of them. I have a lot going on. I have a feeling if we held held them accountable, we would not be in this situation. So what am I saying is that hashtag that I mentioned, we voted for this. Real simple. We voted for this. And if you did not vote for it, not voting is also a vote is when you don't vote. Now, we did a little bit of deep dive in what the elections look like here. The last mayoral election, less than 50% of the people showed up to the vote. Last year, during the presidential election, was in this community, it was like over 70%. No, different communities, but it was around 70% voter turnout. Why, right? And again, not ignoring local elections and local issues got us in this situation. So hashtag, we voted for it. So that's what we need to do. This is a process that's going to go through here. Now, again, I'm not into blaming people here, and it's easy to blame, and it feels good to blame, but you're not getting anywhere to get to this. Why? But there are a lot of questions, and there are a lot of questions that happen, and it seems like there was a perfect storm involved here where a lot of things went wrong at the same time, and they did not have the capacity and resilience to do it, is what it looks like to me. And we need some mature people on out there to do this. Now, to do the investigation and issue reports here. We cannot, now, what does this mean for President Trump? I'm going to recommend to President Trump, whoever he appoints to public safety positions, that they're qualified to do the job. Not looking, right, that they're qualified to do the job, because that's often what happens in these cases. Here, I could, with the fire commission, I could say a couple of these people were likely political payback, right, or patronage jobs. Were no-show jobs, but patronage jobs. Here, that's where this is, I think, that where they need to focus on is how people become, right, that old Sam Kinison line, how the bleep did he get this job? Why, right, during the mayoral race, why, if this is a 10-year problem, during the mayoral race, why do we have, why was this never addressed? Public safety. Why? Because nothing happened then, we thought that we were okay. If you're a firefighter, police officer, EMT, you got to speak up. You have your union speak up on this stuff. If you can't, you may not be able to, but the union can. We need more capacity. There's no reason where you could be on, that you can't go and have a program like this or go on a program. Again, I'll put you on. Do you want to talk about and complain? Come right on. We'll fight that safety war together. We'll be a partner in it. Now, getting back to the elections here. California has a problem just like jurisdictions in New Jersey have the Faulkner Act, where it's a nonpartisan local elections. So anything above a mayor or freeholder, as you call them in New Jersey, with a county legislature, is going to be anything above mayor is going to be a partisan election. What does that mean? You have Democrats and Republicans. So places like Hudson County, they have nonpartisan local elections. And what does that give you? That gives you one-party rule. And in Los Angeles, the last mayoral race, one recently registered Democrat and one Democrat are the candidates here. Mayor Bass is the one who won the election. The other guy is he is actually the billionaire that's getting yelled at and screamed at for wanting to hire a private fire service for his own properties. Well, guess what? Is that so bad? Especially when we identified and we have all these questions here. And these are only some of the questions. I'm sure people close to the thing have multiple, they got probably have pages of on a legal pad of questions here. Is that, are those, not unreasonable, but for that. So politicians are generally concerned with getting reelected. Their focus, and it's easy for them to communicate things simply. Everybody wants a job, or they want their people to be employed, so we're going to bring you jobs. Everybody wants to save money, so, hey, we're going to do money. Everybody wants crime. Okay, we're going to lower crime. And generally speaking, those are the three themes that are out there. When I ran for office, I had a fourth theme was corruption. Or this is right after the 2008 collapse of the economy there, the crash in 2008, and all that stuff that went down. And Enron and everything else. Corruption was another one. But wouldn't it have been a little bit of a better, and I ran for fire commissioner back in Woodbridge as a public safety person. I almost won, too. as public safety, because I, you know, what do I deal with? I'm a safety veteran. We deal with public safety, and there were safety issues in the fire department in Woodbridge and everything that we ran on, right? The slate of candidates. The thing is, if you have an elected fire commission, did you vote in that election? Then you make it an issue. And I'm going to tell everybody, you want to straighten this out, you have to go and after the politician. You have to go, whoever's in, whether they're an election, whether it's going up to commission meetings, whether you're going to town hall, be respectful. Go out there and assess hazards in your community and ask. We had one hazard in our community back over the summer. I called up the mayor's office. It was fixed within 45 minutes. There was a problem out in one of the athletic fields here that my children play on. Guess what? I took a picture of it, sent it to the person in charge of that athletic field. It was fixed like the next day. No, I sent it to them on the weekend. By Monday afternoon, it was fixed. We had a game Monday afternoon. It was fixed. All of these things, and you have to be involved. Now, there's a lot of barriers of not being involved. We have work, we have family, we have financial issues. And don't think that this is not by design. To keep people confused, to keep people divided, to keep people concentrating on all different stuff on this, you know, on these devices here, rather than being engaged and involved in their community. So this is what I'm going to do, right? My new hashtag on all this stuff is "We voted for this." And again, if you don't like the way the outcome of this stuff, we voted for it, or even a no vote is a thing. And if you voted for the other side of this, you gotta know that's not where your responsibility lies. Well, I voted. I didn't vote. I voted. You have to hold people accountable for this, even if you're a candidate that lost. Right, pointing at myself here. That candidate still had votes for themselves, and they still have to be an advocate for those people that voted for him. We have a representative republic here. So even if you lose, you have to still fight for that, for what you believe with that, as you're able to. Basic thing. Now, So that's the bottom line is it's a political situation that has to be solved with politics. And that's all I have for tonight. I'm going to cut it short here. And I hope to see you back later this week. Probably not going to be on the air Tuesday night or Wednesday. We'll see you back here on Thursday. Here I have meetings and things of that nature. Might be doing small things on social media, things of that nature. So, for Safety Wars, this is Jim Polzel, and we're going to do our outro and some music and just our outro here. So,
the views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the host and its guest and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of the company. Examples of analysis discussed within this podcast are only examples. They should not be utilized in the real world as the only solution available, as they are based only on very limited and dated open source information. Assumptions made within this analysis are not reflective of the position of the company. No part of this podcast may be reproduced, stored in a retrieval system, or transmitted in any form or by any means, mechanical, electronic, recording, or otherwise, without prior written permission of the creator of the podcast, Jay Allen.